think last week we learned till Ches Amud Beis, about the fourth time of the seventh line from the top, sixth line from the top. Itmar. The Gemara discusses Hashechet v'sakin shal avdei kechovin. Means a guy has a sharp knife, and it's treif. He was using the knife for years for treifes. The first discussion was if the knife is also bahanor, but it's not treif. Now the discussion is it's muta bahanor, but the knife is treif. So the shaila is, does it make treif the neck of the animal? Does the treifes go, the treif of bliya inside the knife, does it go into the neck? Rav Amar Koylef, so Rav says that asis kadei klipa. There is no reiter if you cook treifes in a pot and you have soup, you have liquid. So the liquid will be, the treif of bliya will be nispashet, it'll spread all over. Here you don't have any liquid, just a treif of knife burning hot touching the neck. So that is kadei klipa, just a little bit, a half an inch. You don't have, the bliya doesn't go through. You just have to wipe off the surface of the neck. Maybe there's some treifas on the surface of the knife that'll get rubbed off on the neck, but it doesn't get absorbed. Zog di Gemara, what's the nekudas amachlekes? What are they fighting about? Lemo, should I say behokam ifligi? Maybe the machlekes says the masava beis hashchita tzayin and the masava beis hashchita reseach. Maybe the machlekes is how hot is yatzoledes. If you have something is hot below yatzoledes, yatzoledes means if I don't realize that the water is hot, let's say sometimes a person wants to go swimming. So he puts his foot into the swimming pool and he's so surprised that the water is cold, so he jumps out. But then he's going to get used to it. He's going to swim in that cold water. It's not that it's impossible. So the same is true regarding hot. Let's say you have a hot bathtub. So if the person doesn't realize how hot it is, he's going to put his hand in, his hand is going to jump away. Yad soledis. Like the Loshen says, Vasalda bechila miponecha. The person gets frightened of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so he jumps away. So yad soledis means if you're not prepared for the heat, your hand jumps away. But then you can take a bath in yad soledis water, you can take a shower, yad soledis. It's not the same as yad nichvis. Yad nichvis means scalding, and you put your foot and you put your hand in, you'll have a part of the skin will get burnt off. That's called yad nichvis. But yad soledis just means if you didn't realize how hot it is, so your hand will jump away. So how high, what degree temperature is yad soledis? That's the shaila. What degree temperature? So the Gemara said, maybe this is the machlekes. When you shecht an animal, so the neck is hotter than it usually is, because all the blood is going to gush towards the neck and it's going to jump out. So the Gemara says, Lema, should I say, behokam efligi, this is the nekudas hamachlekes, whether the heat of the temperature of the neck is at tzainan, is it below yatzaledis, or is it roseach? Roseach means that it is yatzaledis. If it's yatzaledis, then there's a blia. If it's below yatzaledis, there's no blia. So the Gemara says, lo, not necessarily, we don't know what the machlekes is. That could be, that's the machlekes. How hot is Yatzalet? And Mara says, lo, they don't necessarily think that that's correct. One could give an alternative shot. The Kuli Amma could be that both of the Amorim, Rabbi Barbachone and Rav, they both agree, the Kuli Amma, Beis HaShchita, Reseyachu, they both agree that the neck of the animal is so hot. It is Yatzalet, there's man, the Amma Kolev, Shapin, the one who says, that it asks, could they clip, you have to cut off the first inch that was on either side of the knife, that was touching the knife, and may give a bliya to the right, may give a bliya to the left, up until a half an inch. So shaper, that makes sense. It's resech, and it makes a bliya. Uman di amar meidiach, and the opinion is said it doesn't answer. Maybe that's a local reason why, despite the fact that it's burning hot. I did the treaty simonim lapuke dam, since the kon and neveshet are called the simonim, the windpipe and the food pipe are busy giving off blood. So because the blood is gushing out, loid bali, maybe the assumption is because it's flowing blood, so the bliya of the treifas from the knife can't get absorbed. Maybe in principle it is, yatzaledis can't get absorbed. Then the Gemara says, or yikadiyam, another version has it, that it's not necessarily the first pshat. The first suggestion was that this gufa is the machlekes, whether the neck of the animal is yatzaledis or below yatzaledes. Second suggestion was maybe they both agreed that it is yatzaledes, but since the blood is gushing forth, there's an awful lot of blood gushing out, and that prevents any bliya from getting absorbed. And the third suggestion is punk faket. Maybe the kuli alma, Maybe they're both Amarayim, means Rav, and Rabbi Barbachana. They both agree, Beis HaShchita Tzayin, and it's below Yad Soleh. The Saman Yama made Diach. The one who says, just wash off the neck, because the bliya is not going to get absorbed. There just may be some chaz shmaltz on the surface of the knife that'll get wiped off on the surface of the neck. So wash it off and shine. So that shape, that shita makes sense. And mandiyama koylef, how come the other mandama said you have to cut off the first half inch on either side of the knife and throw it out because it's treif? I but you just said the base of shchita is tzaynen. So it's tzaynen, there is no bliya, but tzaynen. And for the Gemara, maybe I should say, agav duch kirisakina bola. Maybe since there's pressure from the knife that you're cutting into the neck, so even though the neck is tzaynen, whenever there's pressure from a knife, that itself causes bliya. So this is a shaila in Taisus. Agav duch kirisakina. This is a famous Taisus that's quoted in Yerideya. In Yerideya, the Ramo writes that the minig is that you have a separate bread knife. You have a challah knife. Why do you need a challah knife? If you're eating fleishiks, take a fleishik knife that you're going to use to cut the steaks and cut the bread. Eating milchiks is cut with a milchik knife. Cut the bread with the knife, fleishik milchik. Everything is cold and cut with the fleishik knife when there's no schmaltz yet on the knife. So what's the problem? So the Shulchan Aruch says, no, we're machmer for this Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rab Meir. And the first line of Tosfos, he says, you see from the Gemara, that even though the neck is considered tzaynen, beis hashchita tzaynen, is below yad saledes, but if there's pressure from the knife, so agav duch yid sakina, because there's pressure, so there's a bliya, even though it's tzaynen. So if you're going to cut the challah with a fleshig knife, the first half an inch of the challah is going to become fleshig. So if you're going to have a slice of bread that's left over, even though you didn't touch it with greasy fingers, with schmaltzy fingers, but you cut it with a fleshig knife, or you cut it with a milchig knife. So you cut it with a milchig knife, you're going to make that half an inch. The bliya may go through. You have to cut off the klipa. That slice of bread may now become fleshy milchig, even though everything is tzaynen, everything is room temperature, nothing is yatza lettuce. But the Gemara said asvara that agav duch kidesakina is going to be a bliya. So that's what the Rabbi Yitzchak B'Rab Meir says. In the butcher shop, the butcher has to treba the flesh. He has to cut out the chutei dam, cut out the chutei chelev. So he's cutting, and the animal is room temperature. It's or it came out of the freezer. It's room temperature or lower. It's nowhere near yatza lettuce. Nowhere near yatza lettuce. But he's going to take a kosher knife, and he's going to be cutting chelev. Then he's going to be cutting chutei dam. So we're concerned. Duch kidesakina is going to make a bliya into the knife of the chelev and it'll bleed into the knife of the dam, of the chutei dam. Then you're going to use the same knife to cut the flesh into pieces. You're going to have to throw out the first half inch on each side because the knife just became treif because of the bleya. Duch kidesakina, the pressure of the knife makes a bleya, and it makes a bleya into the kosher food later on. So Tosfos says, oh, so that's what Tosfos says. No, it's not correct what the Rabbi Yitzchak B'Rab Meir said. Duch kidesakina means like this. The Gemara said that the neck, the base hashchitas, the neck is borderline reseach. It's close to yad saledes. We'll soon have to discuss in a minute what the degree temperature is. The Gemara says one opinion held that it is yad saledes, one opinion holds not yad saledes. Apparently, it's near borderline yad saledes. Even though we say base hashchita tzaynen is below yad saledes, but it's close to it. So if you have a half and a half, it's a whole. If you have a duch kidesakina plus the warm degree temperature of the beis hashchita, even though it's not yad saledes, but it's warmer than, way warmer than room temperature, the combination of both makes a bliya. But just duch kidesakina on something that's room temperature, that doesn't count. And Tosfos proves it. That's a simple reading of Agmar. Tosfos proves it from the Gemara later, Kuf Yud Aleph, the end of the Tosfos. The Gemara says that snow in a radish is a dover charif. So the Gemara says, if you cut a radish, a dabba charif, with a fleshig knife, that makes the radish fleshig. Why? Because it's a dabba charif, but sirif duch kedesakina. If you just pick up with a spoon, you pick up a radish, there's no duch kedesakina. Or let's say you have a jar of mustard. The mustard is very sharp, but the mustard is all liquidy. So this is not shachter duch kedesakina and liquid. So you're going to take a spoon and put it in, you're going to stick a fork in mustard. There's no duch kidesakina, it's liquidy. So what are you going to do? You're going to put a spoon, take some mustard out, and throw it on the plate. So you use, let's say, lamazogan a milchik spoons. You're going to say, oh, the mustard just became milchik. No, mustard will become, it'll become milchik or flesh. You got treif, whatever. If you have dove charif, the tzir of duchke the sakina. Place you have a place, maybe a very sharp pickle, a very sharp salami, and you cut it with a milchik knife. So then you have an asik. You have a duchke the sakina. Or if you have an onion. Onion is a machlekes, but the onion is sharp enough. So we're machmer and shulchanach, we're machmer on onions also, that we consider it a dove charif. So that's every week, some rabbi. Every rabbi has his shayla once or another. Balabasta, by mistake, cut the onions with a milchik knife, and then she cooked the onions with the flesh. So we assume that sometimes it makes treif. Because the onion, we're machmer, the onion is considered a dove charif. And even though the milchik knife is clean, there's no milchik spien, and even though it hasn't been used in 24 hours, and even though everything is tzayin and mamish kol, we're machmed that a dove charif with a duchke de sakina makes a bliya. But stam to use a fleshik knife on the challah, milchik knife on the challah, so lechatchile we choishish for this opinion. That's why the Rambam says you should have a part of a challah knife, a part of a bread knife. But mikra din, we really don't paskin like that. Shalas, how hot is take Yatzah lettuce? What degree temperature is Yatzah lettuce? So in the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, he has a discussion of this. He has a long footnote. So he says they made a study of how hot is the neck of all of the various animals that you can shecht. We don't shecht any horses. We don't shecht any exotic animals. We're not shechting any bears or anything. Shecht the animals that we shecht. So what's the hottest that the neck can possibly be? So I think he records that it's 113 degrees Fahrenheit on a goose, something like that. And the goose is hotter than the chickens, and then the turkeys, and then the ducks, hotter than cows and sheep. The goose is the hottest at 113 degrees. So he quotes someone who said, well, 113 degrees was a pilpul in the Gemara that's borderline, and they came to the conclusion that the neck is below Yatzah lettuce, but you have to be machmer. If it's a little higher, 114 degrees, then it's called Yatzah lettuce. 1 degree temperature higher, that's already called, it's a little bit humorous. But that's what he quotes, that there are those who insist that it's something like 100 to 113 degrees is below Yatzah lettuce. That was bought on 114. That's it, that's Yatzah lettuce. Rav Soloveitchik used to say he thinks that Yatzah lettuce is something between 140 and 160. He says he always used to try with his, how can you try with your hands? The whole way to test if it's Yatzah lettuce means if you don't realize that it's hot and you put accidentally, you stick your hand in, will your hand jump away or not? But if I'm testing in advance, so how can you tell what the reaction is going to be if you wouldn't have known in advance? I don't know. So that's what he said. He thinks that it's somewhere between 140 and 160. In the kashrus organizations here in New York, so the shaila is, let's say you cooked some treifas in a pot and it was only 115 degrees, 118 degrees. So do you have to kasher the pot? Maybe I should say it's below Yatzah lettuce, so everything is tzaynin, so there's no bliya. So in the kashrus organizations here, they consider it a chumer, anything above 120, they consider Yatzah lettuce. They're not choshish for this Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. The 114 degrees, 1 degree higher than the neck of the duck is already Yatzah lettuce. So the machma for 120, above 120, and they consider that a chumrah. It's probably something higher than 120, but the machma like that. The question is the other direction. What's the highest that it possibly could be? The lowest it could be, let's say, is 120. What's the highest that it could possibly be? What's an afkamina, the highest? So it's an afkamina for the din, that if there's a din of stam yenam, if a non-Jew manufactures wine, so a Jew is not permitted to drink the wine because it may lead to intermarriage. I may enjoy the wine so much, I may want to marry his daughter in order to have a lifetime supply of the wine. So that's if the wine was processed and manufactured by the non-Jew, that's called stam yena. What if it's kosher wine, but the wine was handled by a non-Jew? He stuck his fingers in. So then the Gemara says, Tosis explains in the Gemara, it's very far-fetched chashash that the non-Jew was menasach the wine and then he's going to let me drink it. If this is for his getchke, so how is he going to let me drink it? It's very far-fetched. So they would never have instituted the gzera de rabbanon to prohibit wine handled by a nochri, his anoyber abedizah, because of this far-fetched chashash that maybe he was menasach the wine and it's also banua. But once Tosis said, once they made the gzera because of a chashash of intermarriage, the chashash chasnus, that's why they ask it. Pasakum, bread that was baked by the next door neighbor. And bishalakim, even kosher food that was cooked by the next door neighbor. I was watching. I know all the ingredients are kosher, and the pot is kosher, everything is kosher. But if it's cooked by a non-Jew, we're afraid that it may lead to intermarriage. So for the same reason they prohibited stam yein and wine that's processed by the non-Jew. Okay. So once they made the gzera that already did make sense to prohibit stam yein because of the chashash may lead to intermarriage, so then they had a right to add on even a milsa de lo shchicha. So they added on, if a non-Jew handles Jewish wine, kosher wine, it's also, you're not allowed to drink it, maybe he was menasa chit lavoy dezer. So the Gemara says that in the Beis HaMikdosh, you cannot use v'nisach hayayin. We say in the pasuk, "Mechasam v'nis kein." We say in the siddur, "Mechasam v'nis kein kein meduber." So sometimes you have to pour wine down the pipes on the mizbeach. So that wine has to be fresh wine. If it's cooked wine, yai mevushal is pasul anasach agabi hamizbeach. So the Gemara assumes that just like in the Beis Hamikdash, we wouldn't be permitted to use the yai mevushal to be menasach in the Beis Hamikdash. Amistama the nachrim also wouldn't use it. It's a little inferior. The non-Jews wouldn't use it for what is our purposes either. So the Gemara says, if the Jew processed wine, Jew manufactured wine, and then it's mevushal, and then a non-Jew handles it, so there's no chashash nisuch in such a case. So the Ozarua is a sefer by one of the later Rishonim. The Ozarua was the Rebbe of the Maharam Rutenberg. So the Ozarua raises a question, how high the temperature do you have to heat the wine that it should be considered yayim mevushal? Is it enough if you heated it till the point that it's lukewarm, or does it have to be yatzaletis? So he's mesupik. So he says he thinks we should go lechumra. It's not enough posherim, lukewarm, and kolatarkul is not called bishul. So since the Gemara says that yayim mevushal, there's no chashash nisuch. So he thinks that you really need mevushal, that the wine should be heated till the point of yatzaletis. So that's where Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. So how high is yatzaletis? So you can't be make a 120 degrees. If you cook the wine till the point of 120, it's already yatzaletis. You cook the wine till 114, that's lahachmer. When I go lechumre, then on Shabbos, you shouldn't allow anything to cook past 114. Or for treifus, if there's a bliya past 114, a bliya after 120, so maybe there's going to be a bliya. Maybe that's called yatzaletis, maybe it makes a bliya. But if you want to go, what's the highest degree temperature that you would need to be sure that it's yatzaletis, that the maga hanochri shouldn't aser on the yein ha-yisrael, so you can't use the kula dikushim, you can't use the lower shir, you have to get a higher shir. So what's the highest that it possibly could be to reach the point of yatzaletis? So the Tzelem Erov, who originally gave the hashgacha on the kedem wine, he passed away, so his stepson gives the hashgacha, and he's now called the Tzelem Erov. So he gives the hashgacha, so the stepfather, the Tzelem Erov, was of the opinion, that's how he read the Yerideya, that you have to heat the wine till it starts to evaporate. You have to heat it till 212, and it starts to evaporate, so that's called mevushal. And anything below 212 is not called mevushal. Moshe Feinstein quotes such an opinion, he's referring to him, in his tshuvas, and he says it's not correct. He says the Or Zeruah only had a suffix. Maybe if he heated the wine till the point that it made it lukewarm, maybe that's already sufficient to declare that the yain is mevushal and maga hanachri wouldn't aser. And the Or Zeruah thinks we shouldn't be maker like that. We should require you should heat it till the point of yatzaletis. But that you have to heat it till the point of mala resicha, till it's going to be evaporating, till 212. There's no source for that at all. The Moshe Feinstein thinks that is not correct. But then he raised the question, so how high is the highest that you can say that after this point for sure it's yatzaletis? Not going to say 120. Rav Soloveitchik thought it's something between 140 and 160. Rav Moshe has three different tshuvas on the topic, and each of the tshuvas he gives a different degree temperature. The one tshuva he writes 185, one tshuva he writes 175, the other tshuva is somewhere in between, I think, something like 180, I think that's what is usually assumed. Something between 175 and 185, that for sure is considered the yatzaletis, and if the wine was heated to that degree temperature, then it's called yayim mevushal, and then maga hanochri, if a non-Jew will handle it, it won't us. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein taines, that all of the, see the kedem wine, some of the bottles say mevushal, some of the bottles say big letters non-mevushal. Why non-mevushal? Because some of them are heated till 212 and some of them are heated below 212. Rav Moshe says they will pasteurize. It says that all of them pasteurize. Pasteurize is always above 185. That's what he says. Now Moshe thinks that all of the wines that are pasteurized, they're all mevushel, and the maga hanochi can't ask it. Yeah, we are machmer that Tesis, and the end of this Tesis, Agab Duchir is Hakin. The Tesis quoted the Gemara about the Dovah Chorif. The Gemara talks about a radish. It's known as a radish. So if you cut a radish with a besak and shal basar, with a fleshig knife, we assume, even though the fleshig knife has no schmaltz on the surface, Rashi there has two pshatim. One pshat is only if it does have schmaltz on the surface. So we're machmer, even if it doesn't have any schmaltz, then we're machmer, even if it hasn't been used in 24 hours, also we're machmer. Normally, if you have a treifa kli that hasn't been had a bliya bechamin, but roischa in the last 24 hours, we assume that a kli sheinu binyan, the treifa tam is nice and tam levgam. We assume that the metallic flavor of the knife or the pot will ruin the flavor of the treifas that's balua in the walls, and it'll make it into nice and tam levgam. So when you cook it, when you cut a davar charif, we machmer everything. So b'charif, even though it's cold, there's no chamin at all. We machmer aduch kid sakina with the b'charif makes a bliya, and even though it's only balua, it makes a bliya not only from the schmaltz on the surface, even though schmaltz on the surface, just the fleshig bliya in the knife or milchig bliya in the knife. We machmer that also, even though normally we assume a bliya doesn't come out unless you have a reitiv. Just because it's hot, the bliya is not going to come out. So we machmer. Then we machmer, even if the bli and the knife is Zeinab ben Yoima, has been used for 24 hours. Chumis on top of chumis on top of chumis. Baruch Epstein, the author of the Torah Tamimo, wrote an autobiography. His name was Baruch, so he calls it Mekar Baruch. The background, that's why my uncle didn't see it, was one chapter.
Four volumes, Mekar Baruch.
Yeah. There's a lot. Says Gula Farichas Yom. You have to have a lot of time to sit and read. It's very long-winded. So he tells there. He relates a story about Rab Chaim Valojina. He tells a lot of stories there. The one story he tells about Rab Chaim Valojina, that a woman came in on with a shayla on Erev Shabbos, that by mistake she cut the onions with a milchig knife, and then she cooked the flesh with the onions. Does it make treif? And she obviously was a very poor woman, and if it's going to be treif, she's not going to have anything to eat for Shabbos. So Rav Chaim Valojina asked her whether the onions had black shells or brown shells. So in Lithuania, none of the onions had black shells; they were all brown shells. So she said, "Had a brown shell." So he said, "It's mutter." So she ran out quickly to make sure that he doesn't change his mind, and she ran home. And then the Talmidim was sitting and listening to this conversation. So they asked, where does it say that? That's not mentioned in your Yeridaya. That there is a difference between black-shelled onions and brown-shelled onions. So he says, Le'olam, he doesn't agree with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says that we treat onions as a davar charif, and other Rishonim disagree. So he thinks it's not right. We really shouldn't have paskan like that. But if I found, the Shulchan Aruch says that onions, Rabbi Yosef Kara wrote in the Shulchan Aruch, onions are davar charif, so we're stuck. But this poor woman is Nabacha and Aniya, and we're going to have to ask her the whole food. So he thought maybe we can distinguish. Rabbi Yosef Kara lived in Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Chaim Olojana claims that in Eretz Yisrael the onions are black shelled, and black shelled onions are sharper than brown shelled onions. As we all know, that people that have dark hair are sharper than blonde people. Is that so? People, I don't have any. I was always blonde. I used to be blonde. So he says that black shelled onions are sharper. So he's not going against the Shulchan Aruch. When the Shulchan Aruch talks about onions, that it's a davar charif, the Mechaber is only talking about black shelled onions. He never had any brown shelled onions. So since it's not beferish, so he was mekel for the woman. They really all it's dadam lahakel, because there was no cheese, there was no milk on the surface of the onion. So that's already a machlekes, where the davar charif gives a bliya from the inside of the knife, or only if there's some milk on the outside of the knife, and the knife had been used for 24 hours. That's also a machlekes. Each point is a machlekes. So since there was no bien, there was no milchik bien, and it was ein ben yom, and it was an onion, and it was a brown onion, not a black onion, so mamakim hefset, so he was mekel for the woman.
When you're calculating if it's batel, the onions in the meat, do you say chatichas nasin avail, and the entire onion becomes asur, and therefore you need shishim against the entire onion, or do you figure out how much of a galia you had in one sakin, and if there's certainly shishim in the meat against the entire knife, then you say it's batel shishim anyway?
It depends, did you cut with a trefa knife or a milchig knife?
Milchig.
If you cut with a milchig knife, that's called heterebola. So then you never say chaticha nas nevela. You never say that. You only say chaticha nas nevela. You have to measure shishim against the whole onion if you would have cut with a trefa knife. So then the onion has the bli of trefa, so then you have to calculate shishim against the whole volume of the onion. But if you, that's also a chumra. Even in our Gemara, if you say that the knife, I shechted with a trefa knife, hashechet besakn shalov d'gachom, a trefa knife that was used by non-Jews for years and years, and it's trefa, but it's clean now. It's mutaba, no, but it's trefa and it's clean. So the yeah. So we're machman all of those, yeah. So we would, if you would cut the onion with a trefa knife, then so the shy, over here in the Gemara, what happened? If you assume that it makes trefa the neck, how much of the neck does it make trefa? So it says only kadei klipa, only half an inch to the right, half an inch to cut with the knife, shecht an animal with the knife. So you have to be concerned, maybe half an inch to the right of the incision, half an inch to the left may trefa. It doesn't go all the way through the whole neck, and the whole animal doesn't keep on being mispashe. So by a dovah charef, that's also a chumra. That's also a machlek, is a chumra. When you cut with a milchik knife an onion, are you concerned that it makes milchik only the first kedei klipa to the right and to the left, only the first half inch, or that the bli even goes further? So with machma, the bli even goes further. So if it'll be a trefa knife, you would have to measure shishim against the whole volume of the onion. But if it's a milchig knife, it's a terabola, then you never have to calculate shishim. You never say chaticha nevela. You don't say you need shishim against the whole onion. You just need shishim against that thickness of the knife that was touching it.
Rabbi, he starts off, ha-shochet b'sakun shel avodat chacham. So this is settled already, that the behemoth is kosher, that this is settled?
Yeah. That the behemoth is kosher. The only shaila is half an inch to the right and to the left of the knife. Maybe make. We're not talking that sakun shel avodat zara. Sakun shel avodat zara is also banu. So that we had a discussion. Maybe by eating the animal, you're indirectly getting hanor from the knife.
So there's no assumption, just
yeah, a goyish knife, but it's not from avodah zarah. Yeah. Yeah. So this is a famous topic. Yeah. So what's taka? What are we taka paska? Let's say a person is cutting an onion. We're machma everything. We're machma the onion is a davachurv. Let's say I take a milchik fork and I stick it into the onion. That's also a duchke de sakina. I take a knife and I take a milchig knife and I cut the onion. So we say duch kidus akina. We're concerned the bli will go from the milchig knife into the onion, and even go past the half an inch on the right, half an inch on the left. Lasser up the whole onion, make the whole onion milchig, and you shouldn't use it for fleshes. Yeah. What happens? Let's say if I already cooked the onions, so the onions after they're cooked, they lose the whole charifas. There's no charifas. So sometimes, let's say, a woman cut up the onions with a parva knife. Let's say she cut the onions with a fleshig knife, and then by mistake she was using a milchig spoon to pick up the onions or something like that. So after 2 or 3 minutes of cooking the onions on the heat, it's not going to be a davar charef anymore. So every so often the women will ask kachas shaila. They only used the trefa spoon or the milchig spoon on the onions after they're ready cooked. After it's cooked, there's no more davar charef. It's only davar charef when it's still sharp before it was cooked. Yeah, so all of this is, and all of this is straight in Shulchan Aruch. This whole story is in Shulchan Aruch.
How about to eat it raw with the fleshes? Cut it with a milchig knife, I want to eat it with fleshes, but raw. I'm not cooked.
Cut it with a milchik knife, so we are machmen that it became milchik. So you shouldn't have milchiks and fleshiks at the same time. Minhag Torah, it's only also if the milchiks and the fleshiks were cooked together. If they aren't cooked together, minhag Torah, it's mutter. But midrabbanan, you're not allowed to have, let's say I'm going to have a salami sandwich and I'm going to have a drink of milk. So that's also midrabbanan. That milk and meat at the same time, even though they were not cooked together, that's also midrabbanan.
If you use a treif for night, you said that the whole thing becomes treif. Why? In the Gemara, it seems that that's not the case. If you do it with this sakin,
only the half an inch, the kadek klipa, half an inch to the right, half an inch to the left.
So
but here we're dealing with the davar charif, it's known, the radish or the onion is a davar charif. So Rashi has two opinions. So one opinion on that Gemara Kufiral. One opinion is that the blia goes even past kadek klipa.
The meat itself here, that we're talking about the behemoth.
Right.
So we only take the klipa off.
Right. Because the behemoth is not a davar charif. The flesh is not a davar charif.
But it's hot.
Right. So if it would be liquid, if there would be liquid, so the liquid would bring the blia throughout the whole thing. Either everything would become treif, or we say you have shishim, since everything is in the suffix, so you have shishim and everything against the treif of blia. But you don't have any liquid here, just have the dry flesh. So the blia can only go kedei klipa. It's not going to go pesach. Kedei klipa is a little less than a half an inch.
Is this blia mid rabbanon or mid araisa?
By davar charif.
Yeah, in the duchak of the sakina.
Some say it's only mid rabbanon. Some say the whole thing is only make believe mid rabbanon. Whatever blia is going to be, if there is going to be batal b'shishim. Some say it's only mid rabbanon. Others think that maybe it's araisa. There's all sefer. Someone around 10 years ago put out a whole sefer that's called davar charif. Yeah. Chaim Soloveitchik makes fun. There's 400 page sefer about anias amen. How are you supposed to answer amen? 400 pages worth. How to answer amen? There's a lot to say, I guess. The shot is like this. Let's say you have a milchig knife and you're cutting an onion that was not cooked. And then after cutting the onion is pressing down on a fleshig bowl, on a fleshig plate. So if you would have asked me, nobody asked me, if you would have asked me, I would have said, Duch Kira Sakina is only, I stick a milchik fork into the onion. That's Duch Kira Sakina. I cut with a knife, the onion, that's a Duch Kira Sakina from the milchik knife and the milchik fork into the onion. What about on the plate on the bottom? The knife and the fork is not sticking into the plate. It doesn't penetrate the plate. It's pushing down on the onion. There's a doichik, the onion, if the onion just sits on the plate, there's no duchke. If I'm pushing down with a fork or a knife, there's going to be more pressure from the bottom of the onion into the plate. But does that mean that the blia is going to go into the plate? Very questionable. So the Chochmas Sodom writes like that. Chochmas Sodom writes, there are those who disagree, but he thinks that the blia goes even into the plate. The duchke de sakin even affects the plate as well. So that's a shaila, how far you have to be machmer on this.
I have a barber knife and a barber onion. I cut it on a milk or a flesh of the plate.
Right. So he's machmer, I think, on that too. That the duchke de sakina makes it that the blia goes from the plate into the onion. It's chumris on top of chumris. Ein ben yomon, there's no milchix bien. And an onion is a mutal b'machlekes. Yeah. So we usually machmer on everything. If you have a real makam hefsed meruba, then you got to ask a shayla, and you'll find sometimes enough stodim lohakel to be mekel. But this thesis is the source of the whole story.
So you is machmir for the chayyadim?
Who is machmir?
The OU is machmir for the chochmas adam?
I don't know if the shayla comes up. Usually the shayla comes up in private homes.
And you'd be machmir.
Probably. Well, by Lithuania, Litvaks, they follow the Chayyarim like the Bible. So they're stuck. But I'm not a Litvak. He quotes that there are the Chayyarim himself quotes that there are those who disagree. It's a question there. It's a shverichum. Even the plate is also a duch kira sakina. Ginuk, maspik if you say that the fork was stuck into the onion, the knife was stuck in, and the plate, it doesn't penetrate, like I say, it doesn't go in. So that should also be duch kira sakina. It's very shver. So how far do we get? The next shtickel of Gemara. Okay. So the next shtickel of Gemara, the line begins with the word the sakina bola. So the Gemara starts now in the middle of the line. Sakin treifa. I have a knife and a shecht. One fine day I shecht an animal. Then I check the lungs and it turns out this animal is absolutely a treifa. You're not allowed to eat it. So the shaila is, the knife that I use to shecht the animal, maybe I should say that the blia from the treifa animal goes into the knife. First, we were just discussing now the last 10 lines. The knife is first we discussed the knife is also banor. It's an avodah zara knife, also banor, but it doesn't have any treifas on it because he kashered it, whatever, or a brand new one, not treif. And then the next shaila was, it's muta banor, but it's a treifa knife. So does the blia go from the knife into the flesh? Now the shaila is fakir, does the blia go from the treifa from the flesh into the knife. I shechted an animal many times, shechted many animals. And one day I shechted an animal, turns out to be a treifa, sakin treifa. Does the bliya from the treifa, the tam of the treifa, go into the knife? So I have to kasha the knife before I want to use it to shecht another animal, lest it'll make the next animal treif. Pligi bo ravach ravina. There was a machloikis amaroim. Chadome bechamin. One opinion was you have to kasha it with burning hot water, that there is a bliya. That there is a bliya. I would have said there's a bliya. I would have said it's a duchki de sakina with a beis hashchita, a little borderline like we said before. Beis hashchita is a little bit warm, and the duchki de sakina combines together to make a bliya, like we just said before. So chad omar b'chamin. One says you have to kasha with burning hot water. You have to do hagola. The chad omar b'tzainin. All you have to do is wash it off so there won't be any treifa schmaltz from the animal from the treifa. Hilchas, how do we paskin? Afilo b'tzainin. How do we paskin on the previous case? Also meidiach. How do we paskin on the case before? You shecht an animal with a treifa knife. So we paskin meidiach. There's no bliya. We don't say duch kedis hakina b'tziruf with the beis hashchita a little bit resech. We don't say that combination. There was an opinion like that, but the accepted opinion is meidiach. So here the accepted opinion is also meidiach. Hilchas. I feel a bit sad. You just have to wash it off. There's neither a bliya from the knife into the flesh, nor a bliya from the treif of flesh into the knife. It's just made diach. Ilchas I feel a bit sad, and there's no bliya. You just have to wash it off with cold water.
So what happens in the slaughterhouses in the assembly line? When the sheikh checks one animal after the other, and somewhere down the line they investigate to see what the status of the animal is. So the
shechet
cleans the knife off after every animal that he shechets?
I don't think so. Let's
so
say
what
they
happens if they find five down the line, the animal is a treifa?
Yeah,
all the animals going
when they check chickens or turkeys, so I think they check every 10. So if it turns out that there's a pigim on the knife, or it turns out that one of them is a treifa or something, so then I'll ask all the 10. I'll ask whatever came after that one, that you know that that's the treifa. If they can figure out which came after, which came before. Or if they find the pegima in the knife, after 10, you don't know whether the pegima developed before shechting all the 10, or after shechting the 10th one, so the last of the last 10. By behemoth, they'll check in between. They'll check.
And
they
rinse the knife off.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tosis says, let's say you shecht an animal, it's full of blood all over the place. There's tons of blood over there. So, you have to wash off the knife because it has blood. The neck of the next animal is going to be full of blood. There's blood all over the place. So Tosis says here, you don't have to wash off the knife just because of blood. The only time there was a machlekes, but you have to kasha was sakin treifa. Mm-hmm. A shecht an animal turns out that it's a treifa. Is there a treifa bliya? What about sakin ksher? It's full of blood. So the next animal is also going to be full of blood. So a little bit more blood coming. Blood is not going to be nivla into the neck of the animal.
We hold that treifa is mid hamatzi. If not, you wouldn't have to be bodek anything. So you have to.
Treifa is areya, right? On the sichas
so
on the areya.
You would have to wash off even the blood of the knife after each shechita of every behemoth, because it is mid hamatzi that the dam is treifa.
So what's going to happen if the dam is treifa?
So you wash it off. So the shochtim do wash it if after every shechita of a behemoth gasa they don't wash it.
I don't know. I only watched once in a turkey where slaughtering turkey. I never watched behemoths. I was once at Manna Poultry. The yeshiva wanted to buy from Manna Poultry. So my father was then giving the hashgach. So we went in the summertime to see the shechita. So we went with Rabbi Natalovich. Officially, he was giving the hashgach. Rabbi Natalovich was a big Talmid Chacham. So what happened was the State Kashrus Commission closed down the facility later, because they found out that they were fakers, that in order to flick off all of the feathers to sell you a nice product, so they used to pour burning hot water on the turkeys, and it makes it softer, so then you can rip off all the feathers. So they always knew in advance when the rabbi was coming to check. So whenever the rabbi was there, it was cold water. Whenever the rabbi was not there, it was hot water. So the State Kashrus Commission caught on to what was going on, and they closed them down because of false advertising. They can't close them down because they're selling treifas. Have a right to freedom of religion. You don't have to be orthodox if you don't want to, but for false advertising, they close them down. So at that time, the yeshiva did not buy the turkeys from them. Even though it seemed like a good hashgacha, turned out that it was not a good hashgacha.
Don't eat turkey.
Yeah.
Do you have to check the knife itself? Sure.
You have to check the knife, make sure there are no pegimus.
Yes.
Make sure there are no pegimus in the knife. Yeah, but by birds, they check every 10th bird. Yeah. And if it turns out there's a pegimus, they don't know when it develops, so they'll last all the last 10. They save more money, because if they would check the knife or switch knives every single time they checked another bird, then they would have to slow down the whole system, and then they would be more expensive. Like this, they checked 60 birds a minute or more. They checked very quickly. So by them, that they should only check the knife once every 10 birds, and then if there's some kind of problem, so they'll ask all the last 10 birds.
Look, Behemoth.
Behemoths, I think they do probably switch the knives, because it takes longer to shecht. They don't shecht 60 behemoths a minute. It takes a little longer to shecht the behemoth. So the Gemara says that, strictly speaking, neither way. The bliya doesn't go from the knife into the flesh, nor does the bliya go from the flesh into the knife. When you have meat that's full of blood, so you have to salt it. So we assume the salting only succeeds in removing the blood that's in the capillaries that was there naturally while the animal was alive. If you pour burning hot blood on top of an animal and it gets absorbed, let's say, or burning hot water on an animal that's full of blood in the capillary, so you're being mavliya the dam aydei bishul. So mavliya de bishul, so that dam will not come out aydei malicha. We assume malicha will only succeed in removing the dam that's there in the capillaries. But whatever, if you poured burning hot blood, or you poured burning hot water on the raw piece of meat, and it was mavliya the dam in the capillaries, then we assume it may not necessarily come out with the salting process. Tysis points that out, that you have to make sure that you don't... What?
Even if you broil it, it won't come out?
Even if you broil it, yeah. Because when you broil the meat also, when you salt the meat, when you broil the meat, it doesn't take out all the blood. A lot of blood remains behind. But the halacha says, whatever blood remains behind is called moel habosam. That's the juice of the meat. Let's say you have raw meat, and you want to eat raw meat. So Tosis has a raya in the Gemara, you don't have to remove the blood. Damei varim shelo pirish, if you have the blood in the capillary, if you have the blood in the arteries or the veins, the big arteries, big veins, that's blood. But if you have the blood in the capillaries, that's considered moel habasa, that's the juice of the flesh. Only if pirish, if you're going to cook the meat in a pot, and then the blood is going to go out of the piece and go back in, it's going to go into the liquid, the moisture, or there's no moisture, let's say you're cooking a raw piece of meat, so the blood is going to go out of the piece and go back in. So that's already dami varm shepirish, then it becomes dam. So we assume if you salt the meat properly, let's say I have a piece of meat so gigantic, I salt on all four sides, top and the bottom on all the four sides, the salt is absolutely not going to affect the middle of the piece of meat. Piece of meat such a size, it'll affect the first 2-3 inches. Middle is going to be full of blood. Allah says it's mutter. Once you remove the blood that you can remove by salting or by broiling, so the rest of the blood is declared as mayal habos. So if you poured burning hot water on the meat, you are mavliya the dam. So then we will not declare that whatever didn't come out by broiling is moel habasa. No, it was, that's the dam in the capillaries we declare is moel habasa, but the dam that was nivla yidei bishul, if it doesn't come out with the, not all the blood comes out when you broil it, not all the blood comes out when you salt it. So the blood that remains behind is going to have an isa dam.
The hot water has to be boiling.
See,
water?
We distinguish between, has to be yatzo lettuce. No.
Lettuce.
Yeah, if you pour burning hot yatzo lettuce water on the chicken, if you pour lukewarm water, that'll be okay. But who's going to watch it? It should be lukewarm. It shouldn't be atzolanis. Yeah. So that's the Gemara. So we pass in both directions.
I salt it on all four sides, top and bottom, big piece. And that's, so then I can eat it. If I cut it afterwards?
Also, you can eat it.
No problem.
Let's say people are not allowed to take salt because it's unhealthy for them. So that's what they do. You take a big piece of meat this size, you salt it on all the six sides, then you give them the piece of meat in the middle. It's full of blood. The salting absolutely didn't have any effect whatsoever. But that's mutter. because since you salted the meat the way the halacha requires, so whatever remains behind is called ma'al abasa, it's the juice of the flesh. We distinguish between broiling and salting. Broiling is better, that's going to get to overflesh. The Goinim came up with a chumrah that if you waited 72 hours after you shecht an animal and you didn't salt it or you didn't soak it in liquid, so then we're concerned that maybe the salting process will not succeed in getting out enough blood. It'll take out a lot of blood, but it may not succeed in getting out enough blood that you should have the right to declare that all the blood that's remained behind is considered ma'al abasa. So there we are makel. If you'll broil it, so then even though the flesh is over, it was sitting for 72 hours after the shechita without removing the blood, but if you broil it, then we would be makel.
Does that apply to frozen meat as well?
The gedolim were makel. If it's frozen, so the clock stops ticking. Some say if it's a deep freeze, some say not a deep freeze. The Aruch HaShulchan writes lahakel, if it's frozen, so you have more than... that's in Eretz Yisrael. For many years, they used to import flesh from Argentina, from America, from the United States. They used to import. So it was way more than they would salt it in Eretz Yisrael. It would be way more than 72 hours after the Shechita. So they would always have it in a deep freeze. So in the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, they used to be machmer, not to rely on the kula basa kofu, frozen meat, and everybody was mekel. The Aruch HaShulchan says they were mekel. The Aruch HaShulchan didn't have a freezer. I don't know if they probably didn't have a refrigerator, but they used to put the meat out of the window. Outside it was freezing. In the winter it was freezing outside. So he says, if it's frozen, it doesn't have to be such a deep freeze. Frozen meat, so the clock stops ticking. Yeah, Rashi explains that there would have been a svara lachalik like this. If you have a trefa knife and you're talking on the neck, based on shechita tzeinin, so one can say, even though it's not Yatzaledes, the neck is not the temperature of Yatzaledes, maybe the blia goes from the knife into the flesh, into the neck, because the flesh is soft. But fakert, if you have a kosher knife, and it turns out you shechted a trefa, so that's harder to have a blia go from the trefa into the hard metal of the knife, that's more difficult. So there would have been room to distinguish between shechting a kosher behemah with a trefa knife, where maybe you should be machmer, as opposed to shechting a trefa behemah with a kosher knife, where there's more room to be mekel. So we're mekel on both. We pass on that they're both lahokel. You don't say the combination of it's a little bit verser based on shechita is hotter than, it's low below yatzaledes, but it's hotter than, way hotter than room temperature. But sirif duchkir sakin, we don't pass like that. So we pass on lahokel in both directions. So that's what the Gemara says. Behilchasa, if it turns out that you shechted with a kosher shechita knife, you shecht in an animal, turned out to be a trefa, just wash it off on the surface with cold water, and it's no problem. The iikub leisa de parsa lemichpere, and if you have a good shmata to wipe it off, lemichpere means, let's say I dry off my hands over here, so that's called lemichpere, to wipe off. The Gemara tells a story, one guy washed until his diamond, he didn't have a towel, so he wiped his hands off on someone else's jacket. So the Gemara says, Shegetz and Apikairis are Russia. He can tell by the Midas Rosh that he has that he's no good Ben Adam Lamaka Mida. If he's some Zalzal Ben Adam Lamaka, so that's called the Michpere. So that's what the Gemara says. If you have, there is no Bliya. The Bliya doesn't go from the Trefa animal into the knife. There's just a Hashash of Trefas on the surface. So wash it off with cold water, Bitsoinen, or if you have a good Shmata that'll wipe everything off, there's a lot of tzarch, then you don't even need the cold water. Okay. Freg di Gemara Akashe. Ulaman di Yomer. And according to that opinion that we just quoted, the Chamin, that you say you have to kasha with Hagola, with burning hot water. Why? My time Amshim Kabbala Isura. Because you shechted a trefa. So we say the knife is Balea because Duchir is Hakina, but Sirif a little bit, Beisa Shechita Raseach, a little bit Raseach. So it's balea. So frek d'gmar deheteranami bala eivim menachai. Whenever you shecht an animal, so any live animal is an eivim menachai until you shecht it. So whenever you shecht, why don't you say the knife is balea after you finish shechting? So it's no more eivim menachai. But it's not an avela till it drops dead. But if you shecht it properly, it's not going to be an avela. But while it's alive, it's an eivim menachai. So the Gemara asks, why not say that every knife that you shech the kosher animal with should have a treif of bliya of Eiv Menachai? Frag the Gemara, that there a nami bola Eiv Menachai. Is that really Eiv Menachai? A live animal that's walking in a barn is Eiv Menachai. The Gemara has a machlekes later at the end of Perek Gid Anoshim, machlekes Abichon and Ishlokish. So Ishlokish hold beheme b'chayeho, a live animal lo ivarim emetis. Every leg is called it's a walking bunch of Eiv Menachais. And we don't paskin like that. We paskin like Rabbi Yechanan. Beheme b'chayeho, lovely ivarim emetis. A live animal is not Eiv Menachai. If you break off a limb, if you rip off a limb from a cow or from a chicken or from a turkey, that becomes an Eiv Menachai, because not everything is all attached. Nothing was detached, so it's not an Eiv Menachai. So that's Taina number one. Taina number two, what's the definition of Eiv Menachai? So the Mishnayos say that this is one Eiv, this is one Eiv, this here, the three Eivarim in the pinky, three Eivarim in this finger, all the fingers, I think the thumb has two Eivarim. The definition of an Eiv is you have a whole etzem, a full bone. This is a bone, this is a bone, you have a bone, basar gidin vatzamas. If you have an etzem and a gid and a basar, so that's defined as an Eiv. So the gidden don't give any tam, and the bones don't give any tam either. So how can you talk about you shechting a live animal and it has a bliya of Eiv Menachai? The gidden don't give any tam, ain't be gidden mitayin se tam, and the bones don't give any tam. So what was Haktat Shani? What does Gemara talk about? A bliya of Eiv Menachai. But the Pashto says it does mean Eiv Menachai. There are two Yisurim. There's an Issa Eiv Menachai and there's an Issa Basa Menachai. Basa Menachai it is. You have a live animal walking around, that is a basa menachai. Even though you didn't detach it yet, but that is a basa menachai. An eva menachai is only if you rip it off. And an eva wouldn't be able to give a bliya into the knife, because eva means basa gid and batzamas. And that batzamas don't have any tam and the gid. Ain't the gid menachai, and the gid don't give it tam. The more kasha was, it should be basa menachai. So every knife that you shecht the kosher animal with should become treif every time you shecht any animal with it, because it has a bliya from the basa menachai.
The basa menachai the same isur as Eiv Menachai?
Yeah, the basa menachai always needs kezayis, and Eiv Menachai is you don't need a kezayis. It's called a beria. Even though the pinky is way less than a kezayis, that's called the beria davar shomim. So the Gemara answers, why do you think there's a bliya here? Because you have a tziruf, we don't paskin like this, but why the leman the yomar? The opinion who thought that there is a bliya, I but it's toin, and the answer is no. It's a little bit based hashchita reseach. It's taka below yatzaledes. It's not really yatzaledes, but it's warmer than most of the time. So you have a combination of two factors. You have duch kedusakine b'tziruf based hashchita reseach a little bit. So emfa di gemara emas ko chaimo. When does it get hotter? When does it get so hot that you think that there's a beis hashchita reseach? Or there's a little resicha that there's what to mimit tsarif with the duch kiddus. When is that? The chigomer shchita. When you finish the shchita, all the blood gushes through there, so that makes the neck hotter than the rest of the body. The body normally has one body temperature, and when the shchita is completed, then has zog digma. Hahi shaita. When you finish the shchita, it's already ois basa menachai. Kozman, you're doing the shchita, it's not resich, it becomes burning hot. Either a seach that is yatzal lettuce, or a seach to be mitzarfit with the duch kiddus akina, that's at the shchita is completed. L'chigam shchita, so then hetera habit, then it's no longer basa menachai.
Why don't we apply the concept that you said before, as you shechtu, it separates. So if it separates, it's no longer touching it by the time the blood comes out.
Probably the tip of the knife is touching. I mean, the sides are not touching. The Gemara was asking, there's a pegima in the knife, so she make a nekuvas aveshet. She make a nekuvas aveshet, it'll rip the aveshet. So the Gemara says, no, it's going to spread out. It's going to be like a V. But the bottom of the knife is still touching the neck of the animal, still touching flesh. I mean, you wouldn't have to, I said half an inch on each side, maybe not on each side, maybe on the bottom. Maybe the half an inch would be on the bottom.
Even if the first part cuts, but once it starts cutting, then it separates, and it doesn't become usher until the blood comes gushing out. By that time, the tip of the knife isn't touching it anymore, so it's cutting.
Don't know. I don't know. Interesting question. There is a discussion that the Pischei Tshuva has. Someone was cooking up a bowl of milk. I think the story was they were cooking a bowl of butter. And there was a fire on the bottom, and the butter and the milk was Yatzel Erisbo. And then there was a chicken that was hopping around in the house, and the stupid chicken jumped into the bowl of burning hot milk, or butter, I think it was. Then the chicken jumped out. Chicken jumped in and jumped out. So they have a whole discussion. It's burning hot, it's Yatzel Erisbo. His mom is Yatzel Erisbo. So does the Yatzel Erisbo take a bliya out from the live chicken? Is there a Yatzel Erisbo? Is there a bliya from the Eivim Anachai or the Basim Anachai, however you'll word it? Is there a bliya from a live animal? Or let's say a balabasta is cooking soup, and then accidentally she sticks her finger in and she pulls her finger out. It's a burning hot. It's way more than Yatzel Erisbo. Yad Nichvis, a little in between Yatzel Erisbo and Yad Nichvis. So is there an Issa on Besar Adam? So that's a machlekes. The Rambam holds that Besar Adam is osa, that cannibalism is osa. We assume that a dead human being is osa ba'anof. Let's say Mesei Akum. So Shulchan Aruch says that strictly speaking, Mesei Akum really muta ba'anof. The pasuk that teaches you that Mesei Marasa ba'anof is the pasuk that says by Miriam, Atama Sham Miriam, Atikova Sham. So the Gemara says that the word Sham, Atama Sham Miriam, Atikova Sham, has the connotation that the mace is also b'handor, because it says by Egla Rufa, Ilan Sham Sham Egla Rufa. It says V'ofru Sham is Egla b'nachal, and Egla Rufa is also b'handor. So that's how you learn Xer Shav Sham Sham Egla Rufa, that the mace is also b'handor. So we assume Yikre Din only mace Yisrael, mace Akama Muta b'handor. Shulchan Aruch, they recommend you should be machmer, not to get on that, but strictly speaking, mace Akama Muta b'handor. So that's the. So let's say you have a Mesei Akum is Muta Bahanoah, but is it also Bachilo? So in animals, Behema V'chaya, it depends whether it's Malager, Mafris Parsa. In fish, it depends whether it's Napa V'kaskesis. And in birds, there's a whole system how to figure out. The Mishnah in Chulin, Perigel Trefus, later tells you how to determine whether the bird is a kosher bird or not. What about Besar Adam? Human flesh is not included anywhere there. So that's a machlek, is the Rambam and the Ramban. So the Ramban says there's no Issa. Ramban says there's no Issa. The Rambam holds that it's an Issa deraisa, but he says it's an Issa essay. Ezet tochlu, only this he can eat. If it's a behema malagem afis parsa, if it's a fish, has to have snap of the kaskeses, but when you're eating human flesh, so if it's a mesi, so it's also banah, there's nothing to discuss. Mesi akum, if you assume muta banah, would it be also bachil? So the Rambam holds it's an Issa essay. And the Ramban argues with the Rambam. He says, if flesh of a human being is aser min haTorah, the Nisar Esay, so how can you drink Cholav Isha? How can you drink, let's say, a woman expresses milk, and you have leftover milk, the babies drink the milk, then there's leftover milk. So the din is that an adult is also permitted to drink the milk. How is it mutter? But Sar Adam is aser. So cholav isha should be an isa deraisa, just like cholav of a behemoth meyo is an isa deraisa. So the Rambam answers the kasha. The Rambam, when he formulates the isa of yotze min ha'osur, osur, if you have milk that comes from a pig, it's osur, or blood that comes from a pig is osur, because yotze min ha'osur, anything that's manufactured by eggs, an eagle lays an egg, so since the eagle is a trefa bird, anything that's produced inside the body, produced by a non-kosher animal, a yetzim and asr is asr. So when the Rambam formulates that isr, it's lined up in the pasuk that says bas hayano. A yano is an ostrich. So what's a bas hayano? Only a female ostrich is asr, and a male ostrich is mutter. The Gemara says no. Bas hayano goes on the beitzas hayano. Beitzas oiftame is asr. That's the din of yetzim and asr asr. So the Rambam writes that yetzim and asr is asr. Only if the original Iser, if the bird or the cow has an Iser lav. But if it only has an Iser essay, like Bisar Adam, the Rambam says you're not allowed to eat human flesh. So if it's Mesei Iser, it's also Banov. If it's Mesei Yakum, it's also Bachil, only an Iser essay, not an Iser lav. So the Rambam is careful. The Rambam answers the Kasha of the Ramban by formulating the Iser. A Yaitzim and Ha'aser is also only if the Iser from which it was Yaitzim from is a pig, or it's an eagle. It's a non-kosher animal that if you eat it, you get malchus. But if it's only an Iser Esei, like Besar Adam, then there is no din of Yotzei Min HaAser. That's how the Rambam for emphasis. There is a din of kavod abrios by an akum while he's alive. After he dies, ois kavod abrios. By a Jew, the din of kavod abrios.
You can have an akum hanging overnight.
The Ramban Chumash says to do an. Ramban Chumash writes. It says. You should bury him the same day. Shouldn't be mitamei Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban explains on Chumash that the chiyuv to do kvira kvura on the same day only applies to Meisei Yisrael. Once a nochri dies, there's no longer a din of kavod abrios, so you don't have to bury him on the same day. But in Eretz Yisrael, you do. So that's a problem. Rabbi Chalap's father printed a Dvatar about this. Rabbi Chinuch Chalap, who is a very big Talmud Chacham, he printed a Dvatar. How can you have a medical school in Eretz Yisrael? They do work on bodies. They study anatomy by using a cadaver. So they use a Meisei Akum. How can you leave a cadaver overnight? It's according to Ramban, it's an Issa D'Oraisa, but let's say Tamei Sad Moslem. It's a problem for me. Not Mukhuyiv. You can cremate him, yeah. While the Nochri is alive, there's a din of Kavod Abrios because he's alive. But after he dies, that's only, it's like we distinguish between Tashmisha Mitzvah and Tashmisha Kedusha. If you had a Sefer Torah Tefillin and a Mezuzah, then it becomes puzzled to the extent that you can't even fix it. It's impossible even to fix it, so you have to bury it. You're not allowed to throw it out in the garbage. Even though it's lachas man mitzvah, because it had kedusha, bizman ha-mitzvah, it had kedusha, so you have to respect it even after it's no longer useful. But let's say you have the schach of the sukkah, it's hooked to the mitzvah, so you have the lulav, the esrig, the hadassim, and so on, and sukkah is over. So it never had kedusha in the first place. It was only tashmishei mitzvah. So bizman ha-mitzvah, you have to treat it with kedusha. After the Zman HaMitzvah is up, it's finished. So that's the difference between a Yisrael and a Nochri. The Nochri, while he's alive, is Mukhiyav to observe Sheva Mitzvahs. So he's like a Tashmishi Mitzvah. So you have to show respect for the goof of the Nochri while he's alive. There's a din of Kavod Abrios. But after he dies, that's like the Esrig after Sukkah, so the Shofar after Rosh Hashanah, no longer hooked to the Mitzvah. So a Jewish dead body, the Jewish person had Kedusha while he was alive. So even after he dies and he can't, it's not possible for him to be involved anymore in Yoni Mitzvah and Yoni Kedusha, but that's like a Tashmishe Kedusha on Nignozim. You have to put it in the Shemas.
So in the Megillah, the Seret Nehama, it wasn't driven by Kavod HaMes that they took it down.
Does it say they took it down? I don't remember. They hung them up. Yeah, when did they take them down? I don't know. No, it says in Yeshua. It says in Sefer Yeshua when they hung out the Laman Aleph Melachim.
Right.
So they took them down before Shkia to fulfill the pasuk that it says in Taras Moshe not to leave a mace overnight. So that's what the Ramban asks on Chumash. But the pasuk only goes on a Jewish mace, not on a Goyish mace. So he says no, but that was in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael there's an added din Lase Tamis Ad Moscha. But that's why he said they had to take down the Laman Aleph Melachim whom they hung up. They hung them up on Tzavaf and Apachad on all of the Balabatim there. That look, we hung up your king, so you better not start up with us, or we're going to kill you too. We're going to hang you up also. But it says that they buried them the same day. Lekayim Mashikosa b'Toras Moshe, not to leave the mace hanging because it was Eretz Yisrael. But the Chutz Lord, that din doesn't apply. Yeah, in Eretz Yisrael for many years there was no problem in the medical schools, because they had more than enough Arab bodies to use as cadavers when they were studying anatomy. Now it's against the law to use an Arab cadaver, so they only use Jewish bodies. In Eretz Yisrael. So some doctors or rabbanim had a ganza hetas, pikuach nefesh, to learn anatomy, and others are not so keen about that. I have a son-in-law who finished medical school. After having six children, he decided it's time to go to medical school. So he went to medical school, then he had to study anatomy. So he started to ask around in Eretz Yisrael. He didn't like that kula. So a lot of the religious boys who go to medical school, they permit them to graduate without doing work on a cadaver. I assume they're probably not going to be as good a doctor later on, because they never really touched the body when they were. They did it virtually, whatever they saw on the internet or whatever. They watched someone else do it. It's a problem. It's a problem. Okay. Here's the Gemara after two dots. The Gemara says, Amar Rab Yudah Amar Rav. Rab Yudah was the Talmud of Rav and the Talmud of Shmuel. So after the time he quotes from Rav, after the time he quotes from Shmuel. So he says, Hatabach, the butcher, Tzorech Shalosh Sakinim. Sakin is Losh and Nikeva. So instead of Shloisho, it should say Shalosh. The butcher has to have three different knives. Achash Sheshechet Bo. He should have one knife designated for Shechting. Because the knife that he's going to shecht with, he shouldn't use to cut up the flesh, because it's going to have a lot of blood on it. V'achas, the second knife, shemechatech bo basar, that he cuts up the flesh into the right size to sell it to the customers. V'achas, and the third knife, shemechatech bo chalovim, that he's going to cut up the chalev, that's going to have treif chalev on it. So it does make sense, shouldn't use the knife that he's going to use to cut the chalev, it's going to be full of chalev, shouldn't use that to cut the flesh. That is going to make the chalev, it's going to smear up the flesh with the chalev. Freg the Gemara, what does he have to have? Two different knives, one to cut off the flesh and one to cut up the chalev. But the sakan lechoda, that he needs a separate knife for the shechita, that I understand. You're going to cut the flesh and cut the chalev, you're going to make pegimus on the knife. So have one designated knife for shechita. But why do you have to have a second and a third knife? One to cut the flesh and a separate one to cut the chalev. Have one knife for both, the sakan lechada, but lachtach lachbasa first, but other lachtach bachalavim, you cut the chalev later. So after they'll cut the chalev, there won't be any chalev on the surface to rub on top of the flesh. First they'll cut up the flesh, and only afterwards they'll cut up the chalev. And for the Gemara, it's not a smart idea, because exerisham yachtach alavim, bachakach basa. We're afraid that he may make a mistake. He'll only have one knife to cut the flesh and cut the chalev. He may first cut the chalev and then he'll be rubbing all the treifa chalev, the kosher fat be called shuman, and the treifa fat that's in isekar is be called chalev. And if the behemoth is, if you have a chaya, so all the fat is kosher. Everything is, it may not be healthy, but it's kosher.
When he's using the knife to cut the chalev, one surface is contacting treifa, something you can't eat, the other surface is contacting the meat. We're not worried about something going between one and the other.
We are worried. Is good. The knife that he uses to cut the chalev, he's going to have to scrape off. If you're going to use that knife to cut
meat, every fraction of an inch, he's going to have to clean the knife.
Going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. Some of the chalev is going to get rubbed off on the flesh, and then he's going to have to scrape off a little bit of the flesh. You don't need a kadei klipa, but you need a little bit. You're going to have to scrape off a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be a problem. Chalev of chaya is like shuman, yeah. Even the counterpart in a chaya that's exactly the same as a behema, that chalev is mutan, we call it shuman. And in a behema, where we call some is chalev, some is shuman, so the chalev is also with an isakarish, and the shuman is mutan. So the Gemara explained why it's not sufficient to use the same knife for the chalev and the flesh, because there he may do it in the wrong direction. In fact, the Gemara, and now that you have two different knives, one for the flesh and one for the chalev, he may mix them up, he may forget all the three knives. The second shal shechita are probably going to be thinner than the other two knives. But the other two knives are going to be the same thickness. So he may confuse them, he may, by mistake, use the sakan shal chalev to cut the flesh. He may switch the knives, he may, by mistake, use the knife for the chalev to cut up the flesh. And for the Gemara, no, it's not going to happen. Kevin that tzachinu trei. Since the Rabbanim insisted that he has to have two separate knives, Isle has Kera. He's going to put a label on it. He's going to write on the label, this is for Chalev, and this is for flesh. So you got to have three knives. Then the Gemara says, Vam Rab Yudah Marab, the same Amora, Rab Yudah is quoting the name of Rab, Eitzis, about the butcher shop. Hatabach, the butcher, Tzorch Shnei Kelim Shalmayim. He has to have two containers full of water. Echad, one kli, shemidich by basar, the echad shemidich by chalav. That's that one kli where he washes off the flesh. You have to wash it off before you salt it, then you wash it off after you finish salting it. And one where you wash off the chalav. Okay, he wants to wash off, let's say he wants to sell the chalav to a goy. He wants to sell, now they sell the chalav to soap companies to make the soap more pleasant. The Rama and Shulchan Aruch Nechol Shabbos writes, you're not allowed to use a bar of soap on Shabbos because of a machet. Because whenever you use a bar of soap, you rub off a little bit, so you're making a new smooth surface. There was already a smooth surface, now you rub it off a little bit, probably a 1/16 of an inch. If you use the soap enough times, it's going to disappear. So obviously, every time you use the soap, you use up a 1/16 of an inch, a 1/32 of an inch, something. It keeps on getting thinner and thinner. So some hold that there's no isa mimachek, because it already had the smooth surface. The only time there's an isa mimachek is if you have a rough piece of wood, and you sandpaper it down, you took a rough surface, you made it smooth. Or you have the floor, everybody walked on the floor, it's all, or the shoes are scuffed, they're all sloppy. And then you put on polish and make the shoes smooth, or you put wax on the floor and you make the floor smooth. So if you take a rough surface and make it smooth by adding something on, that's memareach. And if you take a rough surface and you make it smooth by removing the, let's say you have a rough piece of wood and you use sandpaper and you make it smooth by removing, so that's the iser of memachik. So that's the shaila. What if you have a bar of soap that already is a smooth surface? By using the soap, you rub off a thin layer of soap, and then you have a new smooth surface, but it was smooth from before. So that's a machlokes in Achrayim. So there are more paskins that you're not allowed to. The Rama doesn't quote that there was a machlokes, he just says that you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, but on the weekdays you are allowed to do it, and then the Rama says, and even if they put in chalev in the soap, you're permitted to use it on the weekdays, because chalev is mutar b'hano, it's only yosa b'achila, it's mutar b'hano, so that's not a problem. So there, the Mishnah Berurah quotes at the Vilna Gaon and the Bir Agro, and Hilchas Shabbos writes, he thinks that you shouldn't use it because there's a Gemara that talks about sicha kishtiyah. If you take oil, let's say shemen shel truma, so a non-kohen is not permitted to eat truma. Only a kohen is allowed to eat truma. Eishes kohen is allowed to eat truma. So let's say a non-kohen doesn't eat cookies of bread that's made from truma, doesn't drink wine from truma. He takes oil from truma and he smears it on his body. So the Gemara says, sichi kishtia. When you smear on your body and get it absorbed into the pores of the skin, that's based on the pasuk in Tilim, that's also considered like shtia, like drinking. So the Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos says that it's only by truma. Sichi kishtia is only over here, it's only a chumim with the Rabbanon, doesn't apply in other cases. And the Vilna Gaon thinks that it should apply even over here. If you're going to take a bar of soap and it has chalev in it, and you're going to wash the soap into your hands, so a little bit of the chalev gets absorbed into the pores of the skin. That's why they put in the chalev, that it should be smoother. So he tells it's a sichi kishtia, that you shouldn't be allowed to use the expensive soaps. Because they have chalev and sichi kishtia, it's like eating the... So those who follow the Vilna Gaon are machmer on that. Most are mekel. The Rama says l'hokel. We say that's... I remember once someone gave a mashke. Someone had yortzeit, so he gave mashke on the yortzeit. So one of the rabbanim, Rabbi Michal Birnbaum, from Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva, he was the mashgiach by Rabbi Moshe for many years. So he said he's not allowed to drink schnapps. But because they had poured the schnapps, a little bit of schnapps spilled on the tray. So he dipped his fingers into the schnapps and he said, sichi kishtia. It should be considered as if he drank. So sichi kishtia doesn't apply to schnapps. It only applies if it's something like shemen. Or the Vilna Gaon thinks even if it's not shemen, but it's the chalev that's in the soap. So the chalev is like greasy stuff. It doesn't apply to schnapps.
You say there's a henta here in this. In Yontif, you're allowed to use these things. You don't say because it's krachil, using the shmiris. There's no iser on that.
Let's say lotion, to put lotion on the body, that's an issue of mareach. Making a new, if you have rough hands. I don't think so. Hetorech nefesh means if you're eating food. To rub in, probably, if it's a shayla, if it's also on Shabbos. So they quote the Chazanish at different times said different things. So if you should assume that you're not allowed, even though you're rubbing everything in, it gets absorbed below the surface, that's the way it's usually assumed. Like that, the Chazanish said l'chumre, sometimes he said l'kula, but usually he said l'chumre. So if it's osar on Shabbos, the pashtuses would be osar on Yom Tov also. I don't think there would be considered a sicha kishtia, that it should be called echa nefesh. I don't think so. Nachmal, so what does he say? Another word. Amar Avyuda Merav, you have to have two containers with water. So one container, echad sheminiach by basar, you should rinse off the flesh before and after salting it. The echad shebeidiach boy, achalav is going to sell a chalav to a soap company, is going to sell a chalav to a guy, it's mutaban. No, it's also bachilah. He wants to wash it off. So you have to have two different containers. Frag the Gemara, why do you have to have two different containers? Have one container and use it bezeh hazeh, and make sure you first use it for the flesh. And after you finish using for all the flesh, then you'll use it for the chalav. And farti, what's the problem? Menesakan lechada, and all the companies that have like that, in the industrial kashrus field. They have a company that makes kosher and non-kosher run. So the first they do the kosher run, then they do the non-kosher run, and then they kasher it at the end. If you're first going to do the non-kosher, then you have to kasher in the middle of the day. At the end of the day, when they do the CIP, whatever, they're cleaning up anyway. So a lot of times they'll wash it in such burning hot water that it'll be a hagolah. Or they'll use, all week long, they'll use kosher, and at the end of the week they'll do treif, and then it sits for 24 hours over the weekend. They don't use the machinery, and then when they come on Monday morning, so it's already after 24 hours, so then they'll do Hagolah. So that's an Eitzah. You first run kosher, then you run trade, then you do the Hagolah. So that's what the Gemara is. Why do you need two containers? Frag the Gemara, what do you need two containers? Well, the Sakan Leichot, they have one container. Menech by first Basar, first wash off the flesh. Vahadar afterwards, Menech by Achalovim. And for the Gemara, it's Xeri, he may make a mistake and he may do Fakir. First, frag the Gemara. And what do you accomplish by having two different containers? You may forget which is for the flesh and which is for the chalav. You may mix them up. He may make a mistake. And the Gemara is not going to make a mistake. Since the rabbis insisted he has to have two different containers of water, since the rabbis insist he has to have two, is this like he's going to put a label, this is for the flesh and this for the chalav. This is red and this is blue, whatever, different colors, so they won't make a mistake. Sure. Omar Amema Mishmei de Rapapa, he quotes in the name of Rapapa, La Lischef Inish Kafle Ilavi Bisra. He shouldn't put that part of the flesh that has the chalav on it on top of regular flesh. Why? The Doiv Tarba, the chalav will drip down, Ubala Bisra, the flesh on the bottom, maybe Bolea from the Chalev on top. How is it going to be Bolea? What? It's burning hot. It's room temperature. How is it going to be Bolea?
Why did you say that with the meat initially?
Yeah, that's the Gemara's Kasha. Ihochi. What do you mean you shouldn't put this on top of that? Ki teritzi nami. And if it's not one on top of the other, also a problem. Doiv tarba bola bis. One is next to the other. One is next to the other. So why isn't it Bolea? The answer is kroma mafsik. There's a membrane. That's kroma mafsik mitatoi. There's a membrane that separates between the chalev in the basar, and the chalev is not going to go through the membrane. So if there's a membrane separating, so what does it bother you if you put the chalev on top, but there's a membrane on the bottom? So the none of the chalev is going to drip out to go into the basar. Yachi miiloi nami kroma ika. Even if you put the chalav on top of the basar, what's the problem? But you just said there's a membrane wrapping around the chalav, always has toisa of krum and iklav. That's a gemara later in the third parak in Eilat Treifas. Gemara says the way to identify which chalav is awesome, which chalav is shuman, is mutter. Gemara says it has to be toisa of krum and iklav. It has to have a krum around it on all the sides. A chalav, by definition, is going to have a membrane wrapping it around. So if it has a membrane, so just like if it's next to each other, there's no problem. So if the chalav is on top of the basar, also there's no problem. And for the Gemara, but he's handling it like the women that when they buy tomatoes, so they're going to squeeze the tomatoes, they're going to squeeze the melons, whatever. So since the butcher is going to be squeezing over here, so he may with his fingernails, he may tear the krum. I did the mamash mashiyot the tapcha miftas. He may rip the krum. He's going to have the chalav on top of the basar, so some of the chalav may drip out. Drip out is not a problem. Everything is room temperature, so wash it off. He may not realize. It's hard to wash it off because it's sticky chalav, so he may not. So he should really scrape it off. He may not realize it that some of the chalav fell down, and he may, by mistake, eat some chalav. Sure. Then the Gemara gives instructions to the Chagas Micha. They're telling Rabbanim what they have to know. In addition to knowing Shulchan Aruch, in addition to knowing Gemara, Rav Yudah Amarav. Rav Yudah quotes in the name of Rav Talmud Chacham, Tzorach Shel Torah Shel Yilmud Gimel Dvar. In addition to knowing halacha, he has to know the following three technical things. Number one, ksav. He has to know how to sign his name in Hebrew. In case he'll be on a din Torah, he has to be able to sign his name on the psak. Years ago, not everybody was able to write. A lot of people knew how to read, but they couldn't write. So Talmid Chacham has to know how to write. He may have to write, sign his name. And then Shechita, he has to know how to shecht. He may get stuck somewhere where there's no shechit. He has to know technically how to do Shechita. He has to do how to be a moil. He has to do Milo. Rav Chananya Bar Shalmei Mishmei de Rav Amar. The first one was Rav Yudah Marav. Rav Yudah was a Talmud of Rav. He only quotes three things that Talmid Chacham has to know. In addition to knowing Shulchan Aruch and Gemara, whatever, he has to know Ksav Shechita Milo. Then someone else quotes in the name of Rav. There are another three things that he has to know. Which are the additional three things? Av Kesher Shal Tfilin. He has to know how to tie a Kesher. The Dalet and the Yud. Has to know Bichas Chasanim. The Shtelach Up. He has to know how to say the Sheva Brachas. You don't, in the days of the Gemara, they didn't have a Siddur. Because it was, the Brachas were considered a part of the Torah Shebal Peh. So it was prohibited to write down Torah Shebal Peh. So it was prohibited to write down the Nusach of the Shemana Esrei. So everybody davened by heart. Rosh Hashanah was a problem that the Chazan had to know the whole 10 Pesukim Malchus Chanshav is by heart. So they had to practice in advance. So Bichas Chasanim, they didn't have any Sidurim written down. So the rabbi, to be able to be Masada Kedushin, has to know how to recite the Bichas Chasanim. And he has to know how to tie tzitzis. Has to know how to tie tzitzis. Freg digmar v'idach, how come the first one, Amar Rav Yudah Marav, only said three things? He only said Ksav Shechita Mila. What about the other three? About Tfilin and Tzitzis and Bichas Chasanim. So he says, yeah, that you don't have to worry about. The Ida Chani Shechichan. Everybody can tie. There's always someone around who knows how to tie. The rabbi does not, the Talmid Chacham doesn't have to know how to tie Tzitzis. Can always get someone else who knows how. Doesn't have to know how to tie Tfilin. Doesn't have to know how to say Bichas Chasanim. There'll always be someone who will know how to say. But the first three, the Ksav and the Shechita and the Mila, those three he has to know himself. So here there's a famous discussion in Tosfos. The top Tosfos is a very famous historical Tosfos. There was machlokes between the Rabbein Tam and the Rabbein Elio, who was a contemporary of his. It may have been his brother-in-law. I don't remember already. So Rabbein Elio was of the opinion that when it says in Chumash, "Kshartam leos al yadecha," means you have to tie the kesher shel yad every single day. The Rabbein Tam said, "Ma pitom? What, you have to tie the kesher shel yad?" Shatam just as another way of saying, we would say in Hebrew, hiduk, to tighten the ritzua. You have to have it tight that it should sit, shouldn't fall off. Ben Elio said no. It wasn't, Ben Elio wasn't so much based on the pasuk in Chumash, Kshartam Leos Al Yadecha. In biblical Hebrew, one can ding sich and say that the word Kshartam means hiduk, to tighten it. But in Talmudic Hebrew, it says, the Gemara says in Menachos, Tais quotes in Menachos, Daf Lamed Hey, so the Gemara has the rule. When does one recite the bracha? Kol ha-mitzvahs kulam mevarach aleim oivel asiyosim. Whenever you do a mitzvah, whether a mitzvah min atar mitzvah min rabbanon, you have to recite the bracha immediately before performing the mitzvah. That's why it says kaidim. It says oivel asiyosim. It doesn't say kaidim. Kaidim would mean an hour in advance. It's also kaidim asiyosim. Oivel means immediate before, as opposed to oivel the oivel. Oivel the oivel means too far in advance. So you should say the bracha on the mitzvah immediately before. So the Gemara says tefillin. That's what Tosfos quotes from Menachos Daf Lamed Hey. On the fourth line in Tosfos from the top, Tfilin, the aim of Sayyid Mevarach Aleim, when they say the Bracha and the Shal Yad, so the Gemara says, Mishas Hanoche Va'ad Shas Kshira. In between putting it on your right, you shouldn't say the Bracha La'nich Tfilin as you're taking out the bias from the Tfilin Zekel. That's too far in advance. You shouldn't say the Bracha when you're shaking or when you're straightening out the Ritzua. You have to have the bias on your arm, Mishas Hanoche, Achas Kshira, as you're about to do immediately prior to doing the Kshira. So what does the Gemara say? Mishas Hanoche Achas Kshira. It should say Achas Hiduk. In biblical Hebrew you can say Kshartam Lo'os Al Yadecha means Hiduk. But in Talmudic Hebrew, Kshira means Kshira. Kshira means to take a knot, make a knot. So Rabbein Elio says, you see the Gemara says Kshira. So it means Kshira means to tie the knot. So Tosfos says that's ridiculous. According to Rabbein Elio, every child from Bar Mitzvah has to tie the knot every day. So what does the Gemara say? Talmid Chacham has to know how to tie tefillin, and then and this, the Idach and the first one, Rabbi Yudah Marav, Rabbi Yehuda only quoted from Rabbi, has to know Ksav Shechita and Mila. He doesn't have to know how to tie the tefillin. He doesn't have to know how to tie the tefillin. How was the Yotze since the time he was bar mitzvah? He's been tying the Kesher Shel tefillin every day of the year.
Maybe he's talking about the tefillin Shel Rosh.
I mean, tying is only on Shal Yad. That is, the Rabbein Eliyahu only says on Shal Yad. Could be. It's a good tainer. Could be. But that was what the Rabbein Tam tainer is against Rabbein Eliyahu. So this was a big machlokes. There's a sefer called Seder HaDoros by Reb Chiel Halpern. He quotes, he tries to write history. So he quotes from the Sefer HaKabbalah. There were three Ravids. There were two Ravids who knew how to learn. The Ravid who wrote on the Rambam, and his father-in-law was known as the Ravid also, the one who wrote Sefer Heshkel. Then the third Ravid was not into learning. He wrote this history book that's called
Ibn Daud.
Ibn Daud, yeah. So he wrote the Sefer HaKabbalah. He wrote all the stories. So he has the Seder HaDoros quotes from the Sefer HaKabbalah, from the Ravid, from the history book, that the Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Eliyahu made up. They're going to go to a big mekubel in Paris. They both live in France. They're going to ask him to bring back Moshe Rabbeinu from the dead, and ask him, when Baruch Shalom told you to write a Kshat Melos Al Yadecha, what did he mean? Did Baruch Shalom tell you that you have to tie the Kesher Shel Tefillin every day? Well, it just means Hiduk. So they're fine, they made up. So they went to Paris, and he got Moshe Rabbeinu back from the dead, and he asked him, what's Pshat? So he said, like Rabbeinu Eliyahu. Rabbeinu Shalom told me you have to tie a knot every day. So Rabbeinu Tam said, the deal is off. Go back to your grave. We're not going to listen to you. That's falsh pshat. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that his grandfather, Rabbi Chaim, said that that's kfira. They say that they asked Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said, well, Rabbeinu Tam says, go back. We're not going to listen to you. Whatever Moshe Rabbeinu says goes. Moshe Rabbeinu is it's called Zichra Toras Moshe Abdi. It's called Toras Moshe. He has the final say. But this was a big machloikas. Taisus quotes at the end of the Taisus, quoted Gemara in the last parak in Erevin. We learned it. Amaitzi Tfilin, the last parak begins. A person is walking in the street on Shabbos. There's no Erev, so you're not allowed to carry. And he sees the garbage collectors, the goyim are going to collect the garbage. And there's a pair of Tfilin in the garbage. They're going to collect it, they're going to incinerate it, they're going to burn it, or throw it in the ocean or something. So if it's a pair of Tfilin, if you think it may be kosher Tfilin, so the Mishnah says, you're not allowed to carry it, there's no Erev, so put on the Shal Yad, put on the Shal Rosh, and walk home with it and put it away somewhere. It shouldn't be destroyed. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, if the Tefillin are Yeshanas, they already have a knot in them, they already have a Kesher. What if they're Chadoshas, a brand new pair of Tefillin that still doesn't have a knot? Chadoshas means, Shehenim B'Kushos doesn't have a knot. So the Gemara doesn't have a knot, so you're not allowed to tie a knot on Shabbos. That's a malacha. So you can't help yourself. You can't be matzal the peritfum. So Rabbeinu Tam says, but if the Rabbeinu Leo is right, that every day you have to untie the knot and tie it again, so it's a kesher sheina shel kayama. A kesher sheina shel kayama. It's only going to last till tomorrow. Then you're going to untie it. So minat Torah, there's no isa malacha at all to tie. Kesher shel kayama means you're tying a knot. It's going to last there for 6 months. It's going to last for a couple of years or something like that. But just going to let, a kesh is going to last till tomorrow. Mikra din, that's a kesh shenish shel kayama. That should be mutter. So why does the Gemara say that it's a problem? It's a imkein lahavi kesh shel kayama. That's the last line, that's what Tosis asks. So this is famous there in Erevin, on that daf, on daf tzadik Zion, the last paragraph in Erevin. So there's a Mordechai. Mordechai was from the later Bali Ates. Mordechai was a Talmud of the Maharam Rutenberg. Mordechai, the Rosh, the Agos Maimon, the old Talmidim of the Maharam Rutenberg. Was the Talmud of the Arzarua, the end of the period of the Bali HaTosfos. So he quotes this machlekes between the Rabbeinu Eliyahu and the Rabbeinu Tam. So he comes to defend the Rabbeinu Eliyahu. He says, even if you have to tie the knot every day, but in Hilchas Tfilin, it is called the Kesher. So maybe the Rabbeinu Eliyahu holds Migud the Havi Kesher Legabi Tfilin, Havi Kesher Legabi Shabbos also. Usually for Shabbos purposes, in order to violate kosher, you have to make a kesher shal kayam, and you plan to leave it for months and months. If you're only going to leave it till tomorrow, it's not called a kesher. But here it's a kesher shal tefillin, so it's called a kesher legabi hilchas tefillin. So migud havi kesher legabi tefillin, havi kesher legabi Shabbos also. That's his suggestion.
Why does he need a kesher? Why can't he just loop it around his own on Shabbos?
Yeah, the Gemara assumes that it's only called wearing the tefillin. You're not allowed to carry the tefillin. There's no Erev. You have to wear it. So wearing is only if it's the normal way of wearing. Otherwise it'll be masa, right. So to just wrap it around, you didn't really make the kesha, it's not really worn the way it's supposed to be worn on the weekdays. So that's called carrying the tefillah. Yeah. I remember Rav Soloveitchik thought that the Keren Torah was right. The Keren Torah writes there on Menachos, he doesn't think that Rabbeinu Eliyahu meant you have to tie and untie the kesha shel yad every day. The Keren Torah thinks that he just meant to say the kesha shel yad remains the Olam void like that. The naked kesha remains for years and years. But what the Gemara meant to say, what Rabbeinu Eliyahu meant to say was, when you do the hiduk, you should tie a knot. Instead of just making it tight around your arm, you should tie it down on your body. That's what it means. Sutton just told, because he wrapped it around a few times, you should tie a knot. But he's not talking about the kesher shel tefillin. Kesher tefillin you don't untie every day. So that's what the Gemara says in the end of Erevin. You've got to make a kesher shel tefillin on Shabbos. That's a malachas kosher. You're not going to take it out tomorrow. He never meant you're going to take out the kesher. You're going to tie. When you wrap around the hiduk, you're going to make a knot between the ritzua and the other side of the ritzua. But it doesn't mean you're going to make over the kesher every day. But that's not the Rabbeinu. Tom didn't understand the Rabbeinu Eliyahu like that. He thought the Rabbeinu Eliyahu meant you're going to have to untie the kesher shel tefillin every single day. Anyway, this is the famous thesis. Maybe we'll stop here. We know that different parts of Eretz Yisrael have different levels of kedusha. Yerushalayim has more kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael in different parts of Yerushalayim, Har Habayis, and so on. And then you have psukim in the end of Vayikra, Chumash Vayikra, that are Ayoris Hamakaf Eschayim and Mimos Yeshua Benun, the cities that have walls since the days of kedusha Sa'arit, since the days of Yeshua Benun, have a higher level of kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. But what if it's not Ayoris Hamakaf Eschayim? What if you just have a city as opposed to a farm? Is there any difference in the level of kedusha between a city and a farm, and it's not Mukav Chaim and Moshe Shobanim? So the Pashta says there's no difference in the level of Kedusha. And today's Sedra says there is a difference. If you have a Bayis HaMenuga, you have a quirk of a Halachit, the whole thing is miraculous, a Negat Saras develops in a Bayis. The Gemara says the whole thing is miraculous, the Goyim, when they heard the Jews are going to come and conquer Eretz Yisrael, so they used to hide fortunes of money and precious metals and the walls. So the Rebbeinu Shlom saw to it that the Jews would knock down those buildings, they would develop Negat Saras, would knock them down in order that they should find the money. So the Gemara says this whole parsha is a miraculous thing, that there's such a thing as Saras Batim. So the Torah says that sometimes the Negat Saras and the Bayis requires we should remove the Avonim from the Bayis and take the Michutz Lo'ir. It doesn't say Michutz Lo'machne, it says Michutz Lo'ir. You can leave the rest of the house standing, but the Avonim Hashepahein Hanega have to remove them lichutz leir. So the Tosefta and the Goyim says Befer, the Rash, a Mishnah quotes a Tosefta, that a person who's a Mitzayra is permitted to live in a city, as long as he doesn't live in a Yir HaMakaf Eschayim Moshe Shur Benun. He's not allowed to enter those Ayaris HaMakaf Eschayim. But Tzaraz, Batim, the Evanon, HaMenugas, has to be removed from all cities, even cities that are not Mukav Chayim Moshe Shur Benun. So it's a chiddush that the cities have a higher level of kedusha than the farms. Usually we think fakert, that the farmers are poshuted people, and the people in the city, they have all the vices, they have all the prostitutes, they have all the movies, and they have all the murders, and the gangsters, and the ganevas going on. So you think that the cities are on a lower level of kedusha than the farms. So here the parsha has that the city has a higher level of kedusha. So Rav Soloveitchik once mentioned in the name of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, a chiddush in the connection with this din, that you have, when you had a Bizman Heta Bomas, Bizman Nova Givon, at the time that Mishkan Shila was standing, it was prohibited to make a Boma anywhere else. After the Beis HaMikdash was built, it was prohibited to make a Boma. But in between, when Mishkan Shila collapsed, when it was destroyed, and before they built the Beis HaMikdash, so it was a period of time that it was mutter to make Bomas. So Bizman Heta Bomas, the Gemara says, Bizman Isa Bomas, you have to bring all the korbanos to Yerushalayim, so you have to bring Ma'aseh Sheni also to Yerushalayim. Bizman Heta Bamas, you can make a bama wherever you want, so you can eat Ma'aseh Sheni wherever you want in Eretz Yisrael. You don't have to bring it to Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, the Ma'aseh Sheni is Nechal B'chol Ore Yisrael. That's the Lashon HaMishnah at the end of Zvach. So Rav Soloveitchik said he heard from his father a suggestion, why B'chol Ore Yisrael? So he had a suggestion, maybe it's only in the cities. Maybe you're not allowed to eat the Maaser Sheni on the farms. That the cities have a higher level of Kedusha than the farms, and it's only a heter to eat the Maaser Sheni in the Kachim Kalim, Necholim, B'chol Ari Yisrael, Davka B'chol Ari Yisrael. Agrois HaChidush. In the parasha, you only have it by the Eben HaManuga. The Eben HaManuga has to be taken Mechutz L'ir, even if it's not an ear Hamukav Chem. Now, Moshe Zalveitch, you got it on. Maybe Bizman Heter Bamis, it was only Muta B'chol Ari Yisrael.
The whole thing is a chiddush. I don't know how to deal with it.